Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Daily Journey Podcast. Thank you for joining us today. Today is a Monday morning, and it is June 22. And today I have a little bit of a different format going on here on the podcast. Typically, I like to bring folks on and ask them to bring some questions and essentially ask folks to interview me. I think that might be people feel a little less nervous doing it that way. And we kind of learn a lot by questions that they ask me. But today, I've got my friend Gary Vanderhyde on the podcast, and I ask him questions. I am interviewing Gary very specifically because Gary has some stories and a journey that I want to know more about. And it's particularly relevant around this season because, as you'll hear us talk about, Gary has had a number of experiences as a white person building relationships and understanding the life of black friends. And so as much as I hate to have a conversation about race with two white men, and let me just name that and claim that here right off the top, it's really more about I want you to hear about Gary's journey as a white, middle-class, suburban person, learning to understand the perspective of people who are not different from, or people who are not the same as him. And for me, that's a really big deal, just to say, in this particular season, in this particular kind of conversation, I want to learn more about the stories of people who are not like me. And I just think Gary has a journey of how he did that. And so I'm just trying to share that journey with you. Gary's a great guy, and he would love to talk to you about that. He would love to share more with you about that. And he's got a blog that kind of talks through his journey there. It's called I-96 East, and you can find it at i96east.weebly.com, and you can check out his journey that he calls Black Shoes and that sort of thing. So, like I said, a little bit different today, but I hope it's helpful for you to hear the story of someone who's white, learning about the stories of folks who are not like himself. So with all that in mind, here is my conversation with Gary Vanderhyde. I mean, I've known you for 2 years now.
Yeah, it's been three.
Three now? Oh, God.
Well, probably not quite three because you were out, you know.
That's right.
Doing your thing.
I was on sabbatical the summer sabbatical. You guys started showing up, and that was like three years ago. Though.
Yeah, 3 years ago. So,
right.
But Gary Vanderhyde is a 59-year-old white male, retired, and working again. So I retired from Hayworth and at the end of March, been there for 38 and a half years. I now work at a golf course.
Dude, 38 years club. Is such almost a long time to be at a place.
Pushing 39 years, so yeah.
Wow-wee.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I had just had enough. So we Nancy, my wife and I called it quits, and I now work at Blythefield Country Club and on a golf course cutting grass. So
is that like your dream retirement job?
It is a dream. It's my dream, and there's one other guy I know. It's kind of his dream too. Wow. He's one of my pastors. So his name is
amazing.
Scott. Yeah. But that kind of tells a lot about me because I love the game of golf. I don't play a lot. I'm not that good, but I love the game of golf, and I love to work in my yard. I love cutting grass. Yeah. Some people hate it. I love it. So
are you like literally on a lawnmower like all day long when you're at work?
All day long.
Wow.
Yeah, I cut tees, like practice tees.
Yeah.
I cut intermediate rough, which is kind of between the fairway and the rough.
Okay. Yep.
And I cut what they use a Banks mower. I cut rough around sand traps and around greens, and I'm on a lawnmower all day long. And
it's
pretty cool. So.
Do you like listen to podcasts or like how do you keep yourself out? You just mow the lawn.
I just mow. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I mow and ponder. So I've always told people that being on a lawnmower is my best place to pray. You know, some people think it's got to be on your bedside on your knee. It's on a lawnmower.
I had a season in my life. So I was at my first ministry job for about 5 years, doing youth ministry, and I left, partly because they were making some changes I didn't really want to go along with, but Cindy and I were also planning on moving to Jerusalem to go to school, to get a master's degree. And that was like a few months out. So I was like, let's just let you guys move in that direction. We'll go in that direction. But it was not a wise move for me at that moment, but I did it anyway. And then I ended up working for a landscape company, and I actually really, really, in that season of my life, I really hated it. Because I felt so isolated, like I wasn't connected anywhere, and I'm just on a lawnmower like all day long. But I mean, that was 20 years ago. I don't know how long ago that was. And now I would love it. So.
Yeah. I don't want to say I like to be disconnected, because I do not. But
no, you don't.
I don't mind. No, not at all. I don't mind being on my own now, doing my job. So.
So did you like grow up around here, or where do you originate from?
I did. I grew up in Jenison. When Nancy and I got married, we lived in Jenison, and I now live in Georgetown. Well, actually it's a Granville address. So we went crazy. We went from Jenison to Granville.
You moved just a little bit. So you've never moved anywhere. You've always just been here.
Yeah. Always been here. Yeah.
So you're about as like, I mean, I say this with all love, but you are like a cookie cutter image of someone who grew up here, had Absolutely. A career here, lived his life here, and
fielded by West Michigan.
Yeah.
West Michigan. Yeah. I tell people when I find something good, I keep it. I've been married to Nancy for 35 years. We were in our first house for 27 years. And like I said, at my job for 38 and a half years. Uh-huh. It's tough to get rid of me. So
interestingly, like as we think about the conversation we're having today, a little bit about your journey around like race and understanding black and white relationships and things like that, the textbook read on Gary would be, this is a dude who's probably as like stuck in his ways as a person probably could be given those things, right? Is that fair
Absolutely.
To say?
Absolutely. I am a task-oriented, get it done type of a person.
Yeah.
So yes. And I've learned a lot, and I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit, how to be a little bit different than that. So and it's hard.
So, I mean, I would love to know, does that just surprise you? Because it like, again, it feels like you're the kind of person who shouldn't have had the story you have had. And in terms of building relationships with black friends and things like that, and considering this big issue for a long time, like feels like you're a person who should be waking up to that maybe right now, but you haven't. Sure. Does it surprise you?
It did surprise me a bit. It was probably the time that I heard God the clearest. Mm-hmm. So this wasn't a Gary thing. This wasn't, Nancy and I went to Trinity Christian Reformed Church. It wasn't a Trinity thing. It was a God thing.
Yeah.
And I think you read my blog a little bit and heard my story. I'm sure we'll share that a little bit. But yeah, it was a big surprise, but it was totally a God thing. And he led us into this, and I really didn't have a choice.
I mean, when people hear that kind of language, it sounds easy, right? It's like, well, I don't know. He just let it. But I can't imagine for you it was like just as simple as that, was it?
It wasn't as simple as that. So it all started at, it was in 2003, March 2003. So several years ago. Mm-hmm. And we were at a birthday party for a friend. And it was in the church building. It was in a Christian Reformed church and a conservative Christian Reformed church. And we were hanging out, just having fun, you know, having some supper and do some singing. And then they had this little competition, and believe it or not, it was a dance competition. Which doesn't seem right in a Christian Reformed church back in 2003 or even today, maybe, but
even today. Yeah.
Even today. So, you know, back when I was a kid, you know, dancing was, but, so I don't think I'm competitive, but I guess I kind of am. So ultra competitive. So we got into a little, there was some gals doing a line dance and they were doing pretty well. And it was my friend Jill, and I did not want her to win this dance competition. So
you were not having it. Nope.
I was not having it. And every church has big round tables that fits eight chairs around it.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just what church does. So I got up on the chair and started to dance. And that wasn't quite enough, so I got on the table and danced on the table, and I won.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Won.
Yes.
And the prize was a stuffed white dancing bunny, which I still have, if you don't believe my story.
Yeah.
So that's where it all started, and you would wonder why that would start a relationship with a, into this world of the black people and relationship with people of a different race. Well, our youth pastor at the time, Ron Smetting, saw that and thought, well, maybe this dude and his wife might make pretty good youth leaders.
So that was sort of like your way in. He's like, hey, you guys should be youth volunteers on the team. And
The funny thing is, he did not say that.
He didn't
tell us, but he began to pray for us.
Yeah.
He was very much a man of prayer, and it took till 2005, so a good 2 years later, when we approached him and another couple asked, and he then told us that he had been praying
over the year
and a half to 2 years. And
so that's the experience that brought you into like some short-term mission stuff and brought you into new that weren't Jenison or Granville at that time. Right. So I think it's Rosedale Park Baptist Church was the church you connected with, right?
That is correct.
And they're where in Detroit?
They are in Brightmoor, which would be a little northeast, I believe, of the city.
Okay.
Yes, I get my directions a little mixed up when I go down there, but
yeah. So tell me about the first experience you had with Rosedale Park Baptist Church.
Sure. So we went down there with a group of high school kids, a good amount, probably a good 30 kids or so, 25 to 30 kids. Mm-hmm. And they had a gentleman by the name of Roy Harlan that kind of led the team at their church of beautifying the area. They live in an area with a lot of blight, half the houses are abandoned.
Yeah.
And the first experience is trying to think if that was where we boarded up some houses. So there were some houses that were abandoned and they get used for maybe selling drugs or sexual abuse going on. So we did some of that. But it wasn't just that. They took us into Detroit on Saturday night and took us to Pizza Polly's, I think is how it's pronounced, but a pizza place in Detroit. We hung out with them. There were other members from Rosedale Park Baptist Church that were there with us and hanging out with us. And we also stayed into Sunday and went to
church. Yeah, which is a very different experience.
It's quite a bit different in that, not that the format is any different, but the singing's a bit different, how they handle that. And that is where we met Pastor Haman Cross. And if you ever met Pastor Haman, he is a bright dresser. He is an in-your-face speaker, best dude ever.
Yeah.
But, he'll tell it like it is, and afraid to. So, and he wanders around, he talks, and gets in your face a bit. So,
This was I can imagine you're like, all right, I'm happy to go over there and like hang up some boards and do some task oriented work.
Exactly.
Right? But it was really like the beginning of relationships for you in that community that was like the important piece of that experience, right?
Yes, very much so. They taught me, like you're saying, much more about relationships. Over the years that we went there, we would take weekend trips there, maybe 3 or 4 a year where people from Trinity would go there, youth group there. And the ladies of that church, they would have us at their houses. They would always have meals prepared for us. And we were just so welcomed into that community. It just was an unbelievable feeling.
So what was like, I guess, eye-opening to you about these experiences that I mean, because you very much could have just said, hey, you know, happy to be the white guy in the rich part of the state that comes over here to help black folks who are not as wealthy, and I'll help them do some stuff and met some nice people. What was about that experience that drew you even deeper into it?
I would say it was actually, I mentioned Roy Harlan. Mm-hmm. He made me feel, he made us feel so welcome at that church. And just that experience where, you know, I don't know how they feel about white people coming over there, like you're saying, you know, more wealthy side of the state, the Republican side of the state.
Yeah.
But just made us feel so welcome. And it was just this unbelievable feeling of this is where we need to be. It really started, you know, my plan, not God's plan. My plan was, you know, Trinity was going through some issues at that time, like every other Christian Reformed church, around music style. And I thought, oh, we can have people go together over there and we can get to know each other better. But it was more creating relationships with the folks at Rosedale Park Baptist Church.
So it's sort of like you just found yourself in this relational rhythm with these people again and again and again, right?
It was weird because it was like we've known him forever almost. Right away. That's kind of how you felt.
Yeah.
It's like, So after that first visit, that's when really I felt God telling me that, you know, Gary, you need to call Roy back. You need to, you know, really see what we can do to get
like involved. This is not just a thing you're participating in, but it was like a movement you were making towards those relationships.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you said something in your blog about lights not working that sort of like got you thinking down the line of white privilege and things like that.
Can you tell me a little more about that? Yeah, a little bit more about that. So Nance and I made a trip over to Bay City to do some things, and we shot down to Detroit for a service there on Sunday, and we got there Saturday night, and there was an old church, their old church across the street from their current building, and we were renovating that to try and make it a place where youth groups could come, because they did a lot of that stuff with youth groups helping out, and they wanted to make it where, you know, maybe they could house some homeless people a little bit. And that weekend I went there, and Roy had given me a key to that older building. So I went in and tried to turn the lights on, and they didn't come on. And it ended up being that they didn't have the money anymore to, you know, to keep the lights on there in that building. They just couldn't move forward with it. And yeah, that kind of hit me a little bit. So there you get, you know, task-oriented Gary trying to, you know, make a plan to have more people down there to work on that building. And God put a stop to that. And, maybe a little mad.
What did it make you mad about? Like how?
It was like, you know, come on, God, you know, I'm going here. I'm going to make a plan, you know, a plan.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
And he just put an end to that.
Yeah. Oh. So how did that thinking around white privilege come as a part of that, or like where did that thread get pulled?
You know, that's after that, I went to a couple conferences that Pastor Heyman invited me to, and this is where I learned much more about the experiences of black people. So we actually went to a conference in North Carolina. It was called Hole in One. So WHOLE N1, just a bunch of golf nuts. Pastor Heyman's a golf nut, so they called it Hole in One. And I heard stories about one pastor who lives in Lansing, whose son was locked out of the house, went in through the window. Somebody called the cops on him, and he had to work really hard at proving that he actually lived in that house.
Wow.
You know, so things like that, where you're a black person crawling into a house and immediately people are going to suspect that you're a criminal.
And you would be like, I've never had to have that kind of situation, right? Like,
right.
That's right. The benefit. That's the benefit a person like you and I would have, the white benefit we have of saying, oh, those are things I don't have to think about, right?
You know? Really don't have to think about. And a couple other stories that happened in the, you know, after that point was we had a gentleman visit our church to do a little conference at Trinity when I was there, when Nancy and I were there, around the whole black and white relationship and racism and so on. Yeah. And he wanted to borrow our pastor's car. So just to do some things around get around town, the Granville area. And he is the president of a ministry company. He's written books. I've read his book. He's written books. Awesome gentleman. He was at this conference we were at, and he drove 5 miles an hour below the speed limit at all times because he was afraid that if he got pulled over, he wouldn't be able to prove that he was borrowing somebody's car, that he hadn't stolen it.
Yeah.
So, and
because as a black person, that's been his experience, right?
That's been his experience.
Again, if you borrowed my car today to go do anything, you wouldn't even think twice.
I wouldn't even think twice about it.
Yeah. No. Cause you're not thinking about getting pulled over anyways, right?
Not really. A couple of years ago, another driving thing, I met Pastor Heyman and a friend at the Mines Golf Course, which is over in the Colville area. And we were coming down, I think it's Butterworth, where we come in through Johnson Park there and so on.
Yeah.
And Pastor Heyman was following me to my house. And it's 45 miles an hour through there. And I was going probably 50 to 52, 55.
Yeah.
He was kind of falling behind me a little bit. I looked at my speedometer and I thought, oh, yeah, he's a black man from east side of state.
So that was like the first thought in your head is like, now that you have this relationship, like you saw that immediately through his eyes.
Yes, like I did.
That strikes me because I don't do that. Right. And because I haven't had those kinds of experiences or what I'm learning right now is the people of color in my life haven't shared those experiences with me. I haven't asked for those, those stories. And so what I'm realizing is I'm a little incapable of looking through their eyes, even in something as simple as, oh, he's following behind me and how come he's not keeping up? Right.
Right.
But it strikes me at how now your brain thinks differently, that now you go, oh yeah, this experience for him might feel like this.
Yeah.
So I feel like a worse human being now compared to you.
Well, we knew that already, so don't worry about that.
Well, there you go. Yeah, but that's just interesting, right? And so what would you say is like the single biggest factor that has retrained your brain to think that way?
Biggest factor. Wow.
Why do you think that way now instead of the way I might think or you might used to have thought?
Like I said, I've gone to a couple of conferences. I've listened to stories. I've also read books. So there was one author, his name, I believe, was Drew Hart, and he talked about how he grew up in a white neighborhood with white families, went to school with white kids, college with white kids. And he talked about how he had to learn, you know, white history, white literature, European, you know, everything around the history of white people.
Yeah.
And where his friends didn't have to learn anything about black literature, black music, black history. So it's just stuff like that really makes you start to think, is like, we're not on the same page. You know, some people will laugh at white privilege.
Yeah.
But there's, I believe there is some of that there for sure. No doubt about it.
It's baked like into the crust of like our experience, right? Like, just like you said, like Drew Hart's book opens your eyes to the fact that, well, everything here is very Eurocentric and not Afrocentric, right? Like
his
people had a history from Africa that they've brought with them over here, right? And he's like, when am I going to learn about that? And the only way he learns that are through the eyes of white people. not through the eyes of Black people. And he's like, how come you guys don't have to learn about my thing, but I got to learn about your thing? And
yeah, in order to be successful, you know, in a, in a business type, you know, financial way. But
he didn't even have a choice in that, like living in a white community or going to a school, like that's just what was offered.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So listening, listening to those types of stories, there was one other story at the conference I was at, a gentleman by the name of James Owens, quite a bit older than me even. And, he was in the Army and talked about how he had to, at that time, you know, a lot of the, you have to wear the gas mask type stuff. You have to train for that type of an attack. And where his lieutenant or his sergeant, they go into this gas chamber together and they, you know, they put on each other's mask and help each other out. Where his sergeant actually tried to kill him by keeping the mask off, you know. So you hear stories like that.
Yeah.
And it just... And even today, when you, I try not to spend too much time on social media, but when you watch some of the videos, it's like the thought process of people is incredible, you know.
Yeah, today you have this, you know, video camera in every hand culture, right? And so on one hand, people can hand wave some stuff away and say, well, because of that, like we see this isolated incident there. But yet what we're experiencing today is the realization that these incidents are not isolated, that they are continuous, you know, whether it's, you know, George Floyd this year, or if it's Trayvon Martin, or, you know, whoever, like it's story after story after story. And you start to realize that, wow, there is a magnifying glass right now on the story of the Black experience in our communities that many white folks don't have an idea how true that really is.
Yeah.
It's been eye opening for me personally.
Yeah. I would agree with that for sure. So,
because if up until now, if you're not Gary Vanderhyde and have some of these relationships and get curious enough to go, well, I want to pick up an author like Drew Hart or read some of these stories or listen to people who are different than myself and listen to their experience, you're going to go on not even believing this is true or certainly not experiencing it yourself. Right.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And at the same time, Pastor Heyman always tells me that don't be ashamed, embarrassed, for being a white person, you know,
right.
Don't feel guilty, I guess, being a white person.
Yeah.
You know, God created Scott and Gary white and put us in West Michigan.
Yeah.
Created Heyman Black and put him in Detroit for whatever reason he had to put us where and use us the way he wants to use us. So, don't get me wrong in that we need to feel ashamed or guilty being a white person.
No, but it is about like we have the opportunity, we've always had, and even more so now, we have the opportunity to say there is another viewpoint beyond my own experience, right? That's the thing like I so appreciate about you as you tell your story here is you were curious about other people's experiences. You were curious about their stories and about their viewpoints. And you've allowed that to shape you in a way that you kind of didn't have to, you know? And that's the moment we have in front of us, even right now, to say, are we going to lean into that? Or are we going to fight against that for some reason? And I don't, or just ignore that, but follow where it leads, right? And that's the chance we have, I think, in this particular season.
Yeah, definitely follow where it leads. You may think, like I said, we probably took maybe 4 or 5 weekend trips. We'd leave on a Friday, you know, there might be 6, 8, 10, 12 of us. And we would have to, you might think, wow, that's a whole weekend gone, you know, when you're working 5 days a week. But the experiences that God has allowed me to experience because of just saying yes is beyond incredible. Incredible. So I
think that's the tough part, like, task-oriented Gary, task-oriented Scott. Like we are people of solution finding, certainly, I would imagine, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And I think, you know, even culturally, the communities we live in feel that way too. Like, it's very easy for us to say, okay, I get it. There's a problem. How do we fix it? What do we do right now to fix it? Let's fix it. And I think you're kind of like helping me see it's actually less about let's draw up the blueprint for the solution and more about let's continue to pull on the thread, move relationally, open ourselves to stories and different viewpoints, and God will take care of where that goes.
Yeah. Right? I'll be honest with you. My biggest fear of doing this was Scott looking at me and say, Gary, what do you think we should do?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, how should we fit? I don't have the solution.
Yeah. So Gary, what do you think we should do?
Yeah. I have the solution.
Well, if you don't have a solution, I mean, what is an encouragement you would give to someone who's feeling, I don't know if awakened is the right word or aware.
Yeah.
You know,
let me say this. I don't see Pastor Heyman, Roy, there's some other names I could name. I don't see them very much anymore.
Sure, right. Yeah.
We'll call once in a while. They'll call us, you know, when the whole COVID thing started, they called us, said, hey, how you doing? And a gal we know from there, her name is Tammy. Her dad passed away recently. So Nancy was within contact with her and so on. When we had our cold water cup, our golf thing here last year, you know, for hand to hand, Roy and his wife, Karen, drove all the way from Detroit, you know, 2.5-3 hours just to be here for a couple hours. And when Roy's mom passed away a couple years ago, we went there to his funeral, to her funeral, to be there for them.
But it's not like every week we're hanging out, right?
No, it's not. It's still white dudes and dudettes that we hang out with mostly. So, but if there are people at Jamestown Harbor Church that are interested in experiencing a black church, you know, a church with mostly black members, it might be kind of a fun little day trip down to Detroit,
a little field trip,
a little field trip to Rosedale. If people are really interested to see what it's about, you know, and maybe get to strike up a relationship with a few people. So.
Yeah, I think the again, I don't have any more of an answer than you do, right?
In
this
season. No.
The only answer I can continue to give is to say, I'm going to try to, I want to learn more about perspectives that I didn't have, you know, a year ago. And so like, I would love to read Drew Hart's book. You know, I'd love to hear more stories of how people are encountering the world and allow that to help me take that wherever it goes. And, cause I feel the same thing too. Like, how do you undo, institutional like injustice? I think it's probably a person at a time and a relationship at a time. Right.
I mean, you can't force a black person to be your friend, right? You can't walk at somebody and say, you better be my friend because I want to learn about, you know, black people.
And even that idea is so white-centric of like, hey, I need to use you to help me, you know? I was listening to a podcast today, and it was a podcast about it was a black podcaster, and he was talking about I started to run into these stories – on Twitter from people I know about black folks who had like Venmo or PayPal accounts and their white friends were sending them money and like not a lot of money, but like $5 to like get coffee. And it was like this thing that's been happening over the last month. And it's based on this idea that somewhere on Twitter, someone was like, hey, if you've got black friends, they're probably having a really tough time right now. Like, open up your wallet and help them out. And this is like these are people who are, hey, I own my own business. I'm doing fine. $5 for coffee. I didn't need that.
Yeah.
But like a weird, like
make me feel good type of thing. Almost.
Yeah.
Gave a black person $5, you know?
Yeah. Like I supported them.
Yeah.
And, he's like, it's not our job to navigate white people's guilt around this.
It's not.
And so I think you're wise to say, like, it's really not necessarily about feeling guilty. Like, okay, feel that if that's a thing you feel. But it's more about how are you leaning in and engaging, listening more than you're talking, and searching out the conversations that will help reshape your viewpoint of the culture and the world you live in.
Yeah. Nancy, my wife, just joined a Facebook group, I believe, around this whole racism issue. And you are not allowed, I think, for the first 45 days to post anything.
Interesting.
Well, you can only read and take in and listen.
Oh.
Listen is huge. So, in fact, Pastor Heyman, he's no longer the pastor at Rosedale. He's still there, but he's retired.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He's still in ministry. He'll never stop.
Exactly.
Hopefully one day you'll meet him, but
yeah.
He actually wrote a book called Cross Colors. So it's Cross Colors.
Yeah.
I think it was his father that started this church, but now he's the pastor. And when he built the building where it's at, he wanted to minister to, I think, middle class, upper class Black people.
Mm-hmm.
When the first white family came in, it was like, I don't like you. I think he'll say that.
Yeah.
I know he'll say at one point, he didn't like white people. I don't want, now I'm going to have to play their music.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Or I'm going to have to do this and I'm going to have to do that. And,
yeah.
And he'll share how God changed him too. You know? So yeah.
You
want white people in the church.
Yeah. Give me a copy of that book. I'd love to read it. That sounds.
Yeah. I'm sure I have a copy here. So, it's an interesting read for sure. So.
Is there anything else that like right now, I mean, that Facebook is like a interesting, that's a great, like interesting way to go about this thing. Is there anything that you are reading, listening to, or even any other things that you've read? I mean, I know like reading through your blog, like you actually did a pretty deep dive into slavery, racism in America and things like that. Is there anything that stands out as like must read that you would recommend?
I haven't read a ton, but the Drew Hart book, that really hit me. I can't remember the title of it. I have it written down, and then Pastor Heyman's book, I would recommend that only because, he's from Michigan.
The Drew Hart book, Trouble I've Seen?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the one. Yes.
Said that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it has a lot to do around everything is white centric, just pretty much everything. Right.
Yeah.
When you watch so
it kind of helps uncover a system that we might not see, like the water we're swimming in.
Yeah. Just to see the Black culture point of view. And again, I don't think Heyman and Roy want you to feel sorry for them or anything like that.
No, they're you're right.
Proud of who they are. And
yeah.
And they're successful people.
They don't need me to Venmo them $5 for coffee.
Venmo $5 for coffee.
That's not what we're talking about. No.
They'll Venmo you way more than money. So
I bet. Yeah.
The biggest thing: listen, educate yourself.
Yeah.
And like yourself and Ben, I don't know if there's local, Black pastors that you could somehow connect with. It's good because I know that Jerry Coney, who is the pastor at Trinity, and Pastor Heyman still talk when things like this come up. They talk to, and listen.
Sure, yeah.
So.
And if people want to like do a little deep dive into Gary Vanderhyde's story on this, where can they check out your blog?
I-96East.Weebly.com. So.
All right. Weebly. It's a Weebly site, right?
Weebly.
I-96East.
Yes.
Yes.
Weebly.com. So.
And as you instructed me, it works from the earliest to the latest. So like go to the latest archive and then work forward kind of is the way that I read that.
Right. Yeah. And I think I actually tried to go on and it wouldn't come up for me, but there.
Oh, really?
So.
I got it open right now, so it's there.
Yeah, I do too. But I did a longer, so it's i96east.weebly, weebly.com/blackshoes, I believe.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for hanging out with me today.
Yeah, for sure. So
appreciate it. And I hope that whoever's listening today I think this conversation has been really helpful for me, and hopefully it's just helpful for all of us. We did this one a little bit differently. Usually I make you ask me questions, but I had questions for you. So we did it around, but it's my podcast. I can do it however I want. So
Exactly. Yeah. You rule. So.
Yeah. Thanks, Gary.
But you're welcome, Scott. Thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.